WUOM, the broadcasting service of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, begins its broadcast day.
WUOM began its very first broadcast day on July 5, 1948. We celebrate our 60th anniversary this weekend. Fred Remley, who went on to be very influential in television and helped set the international standards for videotape recording, began his career at WUOM in 1949. I asked him what the station was like when he first started.
Well, it was still being built, actually. There was construction underway. The staff was very small, and my role was strictly part-time. I did part-time weekend work. Some of that was remote recordings from Hill Auditorium, and some other was recording the Interlochen concerts off the air from Michigan State, who carried them live. So it was wonderful work.
And if I'd turned on the radio when you first started in 1949, what would I have heard, and when would I have heard it? Because the broadcast day was fairly short.
It was short. My recollection is that it ran during the week from noon to about 10 or 10:30 at night. We used to sign off after the 10 o'clock news. That was kind of the cue for everybody to go home, especially out at the transmitter. They knew that at 10:15 they could turn the big switch off.
And somebody actually had to be out at the transmitter to make sure it was
right
on the air all the time?
Absolutely. That was an ongoing problem, obtaining help for the transmitter.
But finding on-air help was quite a bit easier.
My name is Red Hindley, and I have lived in the state of Michigan since about 1952, when I started school at the University of Michigan. And at about graduation, a little bit before, I saw an ad in the Michigan Daily, which said, "Needed, announcer for classical music program." Well, I was in the School of Music at the time. And so I thought, this is fine. And I had been listening to WUOM at that time. It was the only really great classical music program on the air in southeast Michigan at that time. We had 40 people try out for the space, which was a halftime space. Two of us made it, Glenn Phillips and I. That was in 1956. And I started at $3,200 halftime, which would have been a $6,400 yearly salary.
Hindley went on to become the station's news director. In the early days, the station mainly had music on the air, but eventually WUOM began airing lectures recorded at the University of Michigan.
And we had all sorts of strange things on the air. I think one of the most rugged discussions we ever had because of something we broadcast was when we recorded Norman Mailer in the 1965, 64, 65, 66 period. He came to Ann Arbor and gave a talk, and he, of course, was famous for all the words you couldn't say on radio and TV. And he said all of them in his speech, and we recorded all of them in the speech, and we sat down, Ed Burroughs and I and some other people sat down beforehand, and said, look, this is the way he talked, this is the way he writes, this is the way he gave his talk. We have a history of presenting nearly unedited talks, lectures, so let's try it. So we put it on the air. We had probably a dozen, maybe two dozen calls. We were prepared for that, and we told each caller that this is the way the lecture was given, and we thought we were erudite enough to be able to present it to our erudite audience, and they would be able to understand that this was the way the guy was. He wrote and he talked that way. It blew over. We didn't do it too often, but that was a good beginning. It was a good thing that we did that to base the future on, because the anti-Vietnam War period was coming along, and people were shouting, "Hell no, we won't go," and all that sort of stuff, and worse. And we always broadcast that.
During the late 60s and 70s, there were many protests against the war in Ann Arbor. In 1965, the campus was home to the first teach-in against the war. Hindley says the station made a controversial decision to record and broadcast teach-ins and protests. In the face of listener complaints, the university supported the station's decision to cover the events as they unfolded.
We were lucky. There were some schools that closed down their radio stations. There were some universities that decided that they wouldn't have any news anymore. We weren't like that. We were Ann Arbor. We were Madison. We were Berkeley. We were New York. In other words, there were half a dozen stations across the country that were like WUOM that broadcast everything that was going on.
In the midst of that turmoil, public radio, as we know it today, began to take shape. Former director of broadcasting Hazen Schumacher remembers.
NPR, of course, just changed it all. The station had a good listening audience before, but NPR was the great change in public radio nationally, but also for WOM. And some of the people at the station didn't, you know, they've been running things their own way, and now all of a sudden you had a network. And that was another little interesting distinction, too, Charity, that isn't talked about a lot. The Public Broadcasting Act of, I think it was 1967, they got money for public broadcasting, for radio and television, didn't include radio in its first draft of the act. But a guy at the Health, Education, and Welfare by the name of Dean Coaston, who'd been an engineer at WOM, he was in Health, Education, and Welfare. He arranged for radio to get into it. And Ed Burroughs, who was manager of the station at that time, was also involved in that. So they got radio included in the Public Broadcasting Act. So that's how NPR got started.
Now, Hazen, you came on the scene in 1967. You started doing your program Jazz Revisited at WUOM mm-hmm. in 1967. So that was the beginning of public radio as we now know it, the very beginning of public radio
right.
We now know it. What did you think about public radio when you got started? I mean, you were here to play jazz, but what did you think about public radio as a whole?
Well, we didn't even call it public radio then. It was still called educational radio. And as a matter of fact, and there was no satellite distribution, so my radio program went out first on what was called the NAEB tape network. They just sent tapes around. And incidentally, a couple of the people who edited my tapes for distribution were Susan Stamberg and Lee Ann Hansen, who, when I see them, remind me of that. And, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I've not had anybody contest this. I think in this area, if you have a radio set, in this area, let's say between Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti, you have the best radio service in the world. There's nowhere better radio service. We've got CBC stereo coming from Canada. We've got four or five, depending on how you want to look at it, six public radio stations. And it's just a wonderful radio service. And it's built up over the years, and I don't know how anybody in the world has better service. I don't think.
Well, Hazen, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Charity. It was a pleasure.